हरिः ॐ सहनवावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, continuing 122. An intelligent person should therefore reject all bad association and instead take up the association of saintly devotees, whose words cut off the excessive attachment of one's mind. My devotees fix their minds on me and do not depend upon anything material. They are always peaceful, endowed with equal vision, and free from possessiveness, false ego, duality, and greed. Right? Because possessiveness means that this material energy is connected with what I consider myself as material energy. In other words, the body. Right? So that's the attachment comes because of our body, what's connected to the body. So when you see everything connected to Krishna, that the body still remains and everything connected with remains, but now it's Krishna's. So we give up possessiveness. Right? It's like false ego, right? Because you're not identifying with it. Like that duality that there's good and bad, because that's based on how well my false identity is going to give me satisfaction or not. And greed means I want more of this material, whatever benefit I'm trying to get from my possessiveness. Right? Oh, greatly fortunate Uddhava, in the association of saintly devotees, there is constant discussion of me, and those partaking in this chanting and hearing of my glories are certainly purified of all sins. Footnote 43. Sri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Whoever hears, chants, and respectfully takes to heart these topics about me becomes faithfully dedicated to me and thus achieves my devotional service. So hearing and chanting and respectfully taking to heart the topics. That's the whole idea, is that you hear and chant, you'll always get a benefit. But when you take it to heart, like that, respectfully, means you respect these teachings. Like that. Then you become faithfully dedicated. Right? So then you achieve the devotional service. Right, so when we say here devotional service, we're meaning prema. Right, that's the whole idea.
Maharaj, can we say that taking to heart is like the manana process?
Taking to heart, yes, but out of respect, we see that there's a value here. It's good. We try to apply it in our life. Then,
and after we apply.
Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Who are these devotees? What are their words which give auspiciousness? Two verses answer. They are not dependent on karma or jnana, or on devatas or humans for personal gain. Right? So also humans. That we're saying, oh no, but we'll get so much benefit from, you know, the karmis like what we're doing, like that. We don't need benefit. If we're not getting from the devatas, why would we be getting from these guys? You know? No? Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at what is it, you know, what these start like Stardust Magazine or something, you know, then they're devatas, like, you know, Amita Bachchan or that. But that's the point. We don't depend on devatas. So, yeah, they go out with that also.
Like Rava, he did not get from overseas, so he did not try with it.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Yeah, he didn't try anywhere else. Yeah. And that's the whole point is now, with him, if he could give up attachment dealing with Urvasi, then that means it's possible by devotional service to give up all attachment.
Yes.
Right? Because it wasn't just attached, he was attached to his queen or so on. It's Urvasi.
Yes.
Like that. You know, who's beyond whoever is here in the universe.
Yes.
Right? And so that's the point. That's why we always see the example given, because there's so many examples of people going crossing beyond. But which ones are given? These really prominent ones, because we can't say that my situation is, you know. Yeah, like that. Like someone would say, they were dealing in, like new couples, they're quite, how you say, they tend to be very interactive. And so then, right? And so then, someone was making this point that you want to be interactive. You know, there is this thing called a light switch. You turn off the lights, you know, and no one else has to look at it. You know, cool. You know, but the point is that, but if you saw my wife, you'd understand. You know, it's kind of like, yeah. So then, you know, yeah. So that's the whole point, is that, so we're dealing with Urvasi, so then no one can claim that, you know, but if you saw my, you know, yeah. But, yeah.
Yes.
So that makes sense? Yeah. Okay. So we know her qualifications from the story with Narayan Rishi and Indra. You know, Indra has whatever there is available in the material world, he has it. And he's completely dumbfounded with, you know, these apsaras that Vishnu or Narayan creates. So he wants just one of them, you know, just, you know, like that. So that he has one in the court. And so that if you're attached to the senses, she's the best. Like that. We're not saying that, you know, how you say Menaka and what is it? Rumba Devi and the others, Tilotama and the others aren't you know, special. We're just saying she's among special, even more special. Right? Is that, we're good?
Yeah.
So, by good association, now he's crossed over. By hearing these words, he's crossed. So that's it. The words are what has the power, right? Yes, my only wish is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from the spiritual master's mouth. Yeah. Uddhav asked, "Do they depend on you, the Lord?" Sri Krishna answered, "Their minds are fixed on me alone." Uddhava said, right, so not only dependent, but on Krishna alone, nothing else. Uddhava said, "But Kamsa and others also concentrated their minds on you." Right, because he says they depend that Kamsa did also. Krishna responded, "The devotees are peaceful without anger." Right? What's his name? Wasn't, because he wasn't a devotee. But you see, he came to the transcendental platform, but he wasn't peaceful in all those kind of things. Right? Uddhava asked, "If someone hates them, how can they remain without anger?" Krishna responded, "They see friends, enemies, and neutral parties in the same way. This is because they have conquered ahankar and have no possessiveness." Right? Because you have ego, and then because of that, then this is mine. You know, I am this is my ego, and this is mine. So when that's not there, then that's how you, friends, enemies, and neutral parties, you see in the same way. You're only interacting with how they interact with you. They interact friendly, you're friendly. They interact neutral, you're neutral. They're an enemy, then you stay away. That's just how they are. But if they change, it's not that, oh, you were an enemy. No. Does that make sense? Yeah. Thus they are calm when praised or disrespected. So they conquered ahankar and no possessiveness. Then that gets rid of I and mine. So that's why they're able to go beyond the material. So we see it comes down. It's really, really simple. Right? Just have to give up your false ego and the sense of possessiveness. That's it. Right? But that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. It is that simple. And then there's a very detailed philosophy explaining how those things work, the subtleties and all those things like that. But the principle of it, you know, is that simple. That's you understand? So everything comes back to the essence, that fundament. The, yeah. Uddhava asks, but can they see even sons and wife in the same equal way? Krishna responded, they have given up all attachments. Such persons are my devotees. Because you see, as my son, my wife, because it's because of attachment. But if that's given up, then one just performs the duties. And the performance of duties is going to be more stably a nice environment. Right? Because you always have to remember, we're looking for that excitement. But that means what balances excitement?
Depression.
Yeah, depression, boredom, something not nice. But if it's done out of duties, mode of goodness, then you'll be able to deal with situations that aren't so great with the same mode of goodness. That's your balance you're dealing with. You understand? It doesn't go very much this way, it doesn't go very much that way. You know? Does that make sense? You know, you eat the simple food, and then, you know, how's your stomach the next day?
Okay.
Right, fine, yeah. So they go, you know, so a little bit of happiness, there's no, you know, so let's just work. Now, you eat the big, huge feast and all that, and you eat until it's coming, drizzling out your ears and everything like that. You know? Then how's your stomach the next day? Right? So it's always balanced.
Right? Newton's third law.
Sorry?
Newton's third law, any action is met with an equal and opposite reaction.
Yes, yes.
So even he figured it out.
Yes, yes, yes. Like, and it was something to do with food, right? Yes, that's it. Yeah. Now, that's one thing is the Kazakhs could claim that his, you know, how he was able to appreciate the third law, because apples, you know, in their opinion, come from their place.
Mm-hmm. Right? They own gravity.
No, not the gravity, the apple. Because, you know, it means other things falling on his head, you know, that you walk by and they emptied the chamber pot and that, he didn't get the same result. So it's only when the apple was there, that's when he got the realization.
I wonder if that has anything to do with Adam and Eve.
It's the same area. Yeah, you probably find out it was a mango, right? Or it was a durian, right? You know, don't eat the durian. No, you eat that, you're out of here. You know? Okay, we're up here. Sri Krishna continued. What more remains to be accomplished for the perfect devotee after achieving devotional service unto me? Because when we say here devotional service, it means it's constant. When it's fixed, so that's pure devotional service. That's perfect. Because before that, we will be doing sometimes not.
Yeah.
Like that. And then as we go, it becomes more and more that we're absorbed in service and less that we're not, until such point as we're always absorbed in service. Right? Okay, what more remains to be accomplished for the perfect devotee after achieving devotional service unto me, the Supreme Absolute Truth, whose qualities are innumerable, and who am the embodiment of all ecstatic experience? Just as cold, fear, and darkness are eradicated for one who has approached the sacrificial fire. So dullness, fear, and ignorance are destroyed for one engaged in serving the devotees of the Lord. Dullness, fear, and ignorance. Right? So if we're worried the class will be dull, then when we get more absorbed, it will be less dull. Or it means when the person giving the class is fully absorbed in devotional service, it'll be less dull. Also, you have to think of both sides.
Yes.
That's more tricky.
Yeah, so then when you have it like here, when you have both sides are, what is it? The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Like that, yeah. So then, less dull. Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's what they didn't have what do you call it? Oh, they were at Radha Damodar. They probably didn't have the advantage of the thermoses, so then they wouldn't get sleepy. But then they also didn't the cold didn't bother them either. So.
Now, it seems that it's going together, dullness, fear, and ignorance.
Dullness, fear, and ignorance, yeah. Because they're all coming from the same point. Is if something means you're talking passion, ignorance. So dullness means then you're just ignorance. You're not aware, you're not conscious. Then fear is you're attached to something, so then you're afraid of losing in connection with that. That means, and then because of that possessiveness, that aspect, then there's going to be the desire for excitement and all that from it.
Yes.
You know, but then that if it's not happening, then it's boring.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? So that's the thing. So when there's a thing that it has to be so exciting, those are the ones that are talking about boring. You know, so it's like the teenagers. It's either ecstasy or boring. There's nothing in between. And then when they hit 30, they kind of figure out boring is good. You know, like that. Because there's worse than boring. There's worse. Well, that's why then they sit in rocking chairs on the front porch. So anything just goes by. Like, wow. It is moving. You know? So as long as that's, you can perceive that they're moving and your rocking chair is moving, you're okay. When either of those stop, there's a problem.
Can we say that this enlightening each other, it happens also during the kirtan?
Enlightening during the kirtan? Why not?
Of the opposite direction, right? The
audience
of the kirtanios goes back.
Why wouldn't it? I mean, devotional service only goes one way. Yeah. But one-way streets are annoying or not annoying? Annoying. So therefore, then devotional service must not be one way. Okay. Going to hell, that's a one way. That's it. Yeah. Yeah, funny. It's interesting. It's a stairway to heaven. It means you have to make step. You have to work at it, but it's a highway to hell.
It also says something about the expected like quantities of going each direction.
Yeah, it means the one is a lot of work and the other one is just, you know. Yes. The devotees of the Lord, peacefully fixed in absolute knowledge, are the ultimate shelter for those who are repeatedly rising and falling within the fearful ocean of material life. Such devotees are just like a strong boat that comes to rescue persons who are at the point of drowning. Just as food is the life of all creatures, just as I am the ultimate shelter for the distressed, and just as religion is the wealth of those who are passing away from this world, so my devotees are the only refuge of persons fearful of falling into the miserable condition of life. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, without food, the prana cannot function. Food is therefore the prana of living entities, living beings. For those who desire bhakti, they seek the devotees, since without the devotees, bhakti cannot be accomplished. I am the shelter and protector of those suffering, who are without shelter. Similarly, the devotees are the protectors of those desiring bhakti. Dharma is the shelter of persons fearing the ropes of time after dying. Similarly, devotees, protectors of the path of bhakti, are the shelter for persons fearing the ropes of the highway thieves called lust and anger, after they have accepted the path of bhakti. Not bad. Kept reading and the guy went by. That's never happened before. Okay. Joy. Yeah, because I guess all the bad guys hang out on the highway anyway, so it's natural the highway to hell will be. Sri Krishna continued, My devotees bestow divine eyes, whereas the sun allows only external sight, and that only when it is arisen, when it is risen in the sky. My devotees are one's real worshipable deities and real family. They are one's own self, and ultimately they are non-different from me. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Moreover, for those who have dedicated themselves to the path of the devotees bestow all things necessary. The devotees give eyes to see me directly. This means that they have the nine types of worship. The eyes cannot fulfill their functions without the sun. However, the devotees situated externally are the sun which has risen in the sky and illuminate the worship, the eye. The devotees alone and not Indra and others are worthy of worship for those treading the path of bhakti. The devotees alone and not parents or relatives are friends. Right, so if the parents are and relatives are devotees, then that's because they're devotees that they're friends. But otherwise, the parents and all relatives, then the point is it's all based on the bodily platform. The soul isn't the bodily platform. So the relationship is these bodies, yes, are all connected. But the point is that doesn't connect the souls. So it's only devotional service connects the souls. That's real friendship. The devotees alone and not the body or one's own atma are the object of affection, atma. Right? So therefore, it's devotee to devotee. It means it's the soul to the soul.
Yes.
Like that. The devotees alone are me, the supreme deity. One should not give them up and worship. One should not give them up and worship only me. Right? So that means when exclusive worship of Krishna means that you're worshiping the devotees. Right? Sri Krishna concluded. Thus, losing his desire to be on the same planet as Urvasi, Maharaj questions. Okay.
Too many questions.
Yeah, yeah. You should have seen the original. The original, there's 20 questions.
For this?
Hmm? 20 questions per chapter?
No, for everyone. Every chapter of Gita, there's 20 questions.
Yeah, for Gita, yes.
We could probably put 100 if you want.
Everywhere.
What does possession, giving up possession mean? What is possession?
Make money say about that.
Yeah.
This is for the independence, this question.
Hmm?
Independence for the question.
Independence.
No. All these questions are for the heavenly planets.
Heavenly planets.
No,
oh, okay.
Yeah, we are small.
Oh, okay. So technically, okay. Or the Satyalokas. Right?
Yes.
Okay. So Maharaj Purava began to wander the earth free of all material association and completely satisfied within the self. This verse concludes the story. The name Vaitasena means Purava, the son of Vitasena. Vitasena means he whose troops became women by entering Shiva's forests. Oh, okay, so he's his son. Okay. The story of Sudyumna or Vitasena is told in the ninth canto, footnote 44. Right, so all these stories are all connected, right?
Yeah, I was just thinking how it was related.
Yeah, it all connected. Footnote 44. Sudyumna, being transformed into a woman, accepted Buddha, the son of the moon, as her husband, and had a son named Pururava. By the grace of Lord Shiva, Sudyumna received the benediction he would live 1 month as a woman and 1 month as a man. Okay.
No. Hmm? It's no wonder that Pururava was edited.
Yeah. Well, when somebody, the king, his whole army, becomes women, then you know. Yeah. After this, he wandered the earth because he was detached from Urvasi's place, or was detached from seeing her. Right? You know, the point is, the place means he'll see her. So if he's detached from her, he's detached from the place. Conclusion. An intelligent person should therefore reject all bad association and instead take up the association of saintly devotees, whose words cut off the excessive attachment of one's mind. By receiving the mercy of Krishna through the association of the devotees, one is able to give up bad association, which is a major obstacle on the spiritual path. Mm-hmm. Right, because the major obstacle is that they have false ego. They have the sense of possession. And because of that, they think that you can actually control and enjoy the material world. So that association will inspire us that it will be good. You know, like we said yesterday, by the technology, then everything will be perfect. It's you know, it has such a dynamic force in Krishna consciousness, you know, like this, or whatever it is. You know, if we develop community, if we develop this or that, whatever these things are there, where do we get them from? Means Prabhupada talked about the community of Vaishnavas. It's called the League of Devotees before he came to, you know, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So now that we don't care, but then when we come up with community, where are we getting that from? Right? Yeah, it's not coming from the books, right? It's not coming from the acharyas. It's coming from the materialists. You know, if we're into health food, where'd that come from? The materialists. You know what I'm saying? Whatever it is that's going on, if it's coming from the materialist, then the difficulty is it will be a major stumbling block. Not that you can't engage it in Krishna's service, but because of the identity one gets with it, an attachment to. We don't see things spiritually. Like if you, let's say you're eating Mahaprasad, let's say you have somebody who's a health freak, okay? And they come with a Mahaplate, right? And they're there, and you take the Pakura. Is something going to be said?
Yes.
Yeah. Means the, you know, high saying. What is it? As sure as little green apples or something? Some.
If that's sure, then yes.
Yes. It just means they will. They have to. They have to go on this whole thing about this and you're killing yourself and so many things and this and refined and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like that. So they can't see prasad. You know what I'm saying? You know, means not that one's not careful about what you eat, but the point is it's maha. You don't make those distinctions. You know, your daily meal and that, then you will eat according to that. But mahaprasad, you don't make those distinctions. You know? That's why also previously, you know, many in their tradition would take all the maha and mix it all up. You know, so that way, you know, it's all... And it has a particular flavor that way. It's nice. You know? They call it marukari, right? Okay, so it's, but the point is that association. Then you think doubt Bashad, you doubt this, and you think the health becomes the most important, and this and that, and the person who's making the comment is one of the most unhealthy people you know. Like that, they're always having to deal with their health because they're, you know, because all they eat is healthy food, you know. But the problem is their mentality's not healthy. Mm-hmm. Food may be great, right? Does that make sense? But their mentality is not great.
So we think bhakti is dependent on karma.
Yeah, we think it's that. How can you be, you know, like that? We'll think it's dependent on karma. Because we ourselves, coming from a background of karmis, you know, being a karmi, we'll think bhakti is dependent on that. Because we take it that religion is a form of karma. Like that. Which it is. It means religion is the base, it means it's the definition of karma. And those who come from a background of gyan, then they'll think it's only the intellectual. Unless you have all the knowledge, then you can't. But all it is the surrender. That's why it's there. But he's given up attachment to Urvasi. He's come to the transcendental position. The other one's given up his attachment to his position, wealth, and all these kind of things, and he's come to that position. Right? Does that make sense? You know. So it's just a matter of giving up the mundane concept of I and mine. Then, and just identifying as we're servants of Krishna, then all these problems go away. Everything falls in place.
Yes. Just to change our consciousness.
All these discussions are just to get us to change the consciousness. And then, having changed the consciousness, then we'll be able to judge what things that we're working with, do they require, you know, are they useful or not? And if we haven't changed the consciousness, then the things are recommended for us. You know, Krishna says, lifestyle and mode of goodness is recommended for one who hasn't come to pure devotional service. Because one in pure devotional service, then they function in pure goodness. But at least if you're not on the platform of pure goodness, then you function in goodness. Because you can conquer passion and ignorance by goodness. But even that has to be given up for pure goodness. Chapter 27. Lord Krishna's instructions on the process of deity worship. Dialogue overview. In the previous chapter, the Lord condemned attachment to bad association. Uddhava now asks about the method of deity worship in order to help those who are attached to family life to become purified. Pratigya. Even very opulent presentations do not satisfy Krishna if they are offered by non-devotees. But he is pleased by an insignificant offering made by his loving devotees. That doesn't mean that some will interpret this to mean he only wants insignificant offerings. I'm going to eat whatever I like, but Krishna only gets insignificant ones.
Yes.
Right? It's like that. You know, this is attachment.
This food to leaf.
Huh?
A food, a leaf, some water.
Yeah, because that's what he gets. And then I eat what I want. Because otherwise, if I, you know, it's about offering what I eat to him, then is it pleasing to him what I'm eating? That question comes up. You know, so, yeah. Chapter 27 summarizes questions and answers. Sri Uddhava asked Sri Krishna question 1132 of Srimad Bhagavatam. From 1127, 1 and 5, Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, O Master of the devotees, please explain to me the prescribed method of worshipping you in your deity form. What are the qualifications of those devotees who worship the deity? On what basis is such worship established? And what is the specific method of worship? O Lotus-Eyed One, O Supreme Lord of all lords of the universe, please explain to your devoted servant this means of liberation from the bondage of work." Right? So, yeah. So, this itself, deity worship, even though it's direct, it will free you from the bondage to work. Right? So you perform karma, it'll bring you to jnana, but you're still bound. But you perform karmas in connection with serving Krishna as the deity, that will bring you to the transcendental platform. Right? So the Bhagavat is transcendental knowledge, and the Pancharatra is transcendental knowledge. They're both explaining the same thing. Just one has the practical aspect of the technical worship. Sri Krishna answers this question throughout the rest of the chapter. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 27th chapter, Krishna describes bhakti in the form of deity worship, called Kriya Yoga, along with the various articles of worship, while engaging in one's prescribed duties. Sardartha Darshani 11.7.1. Worshipping the deity form of the Supreme Lord automatically brings purity. And satisfaction to the mind. Thus it is the source of all desirable gains. If a person has no engagement in deity service, he will simply remain attached to material sense gratification, and he will have no hope of giving up bad association. Right? Because worship of the deity then makes the idea is that the deity becomes the center of life. So that's why Prabhupada made such a nice temple program. Is that everybody can be absorbed. So you don't have to be a pujari. Everybody from Mangalarti until breakfast is fully absorbed. You know, that's the whole idea. So where's the bad association? The personality of Godhead has given instruction among the regulations of the Satvata scriptures on the process of worshipping him as the bona fide deity. Brahma, Shiva, Narada, Vyasa, and all other sages have recommended this process described by the Lord as most perfectly beneficial for all the occupational classes and spiritual orders of human society, including even the women and Shudras. There are three varieties of archana, deity worship based on either the original Veda, the secondary Tantras, or a combination of these. The deity image, the ground, the fire, the sun, the water, and the heart of the worshipper are all true locations of the deity's presence. The deity form to be worshipped may be constructed of any of the eight substances. Stone, wood, metal, clay, paint, sand, drawn upon the ground. The mind or jewels. These categories are further subdivided into two, temporary and permanent. Right, so there's, yeah. Get into that. No, yeah, we won't get into it now. The details of the worshipping process are as follows. The devotee should bathe both physically and by chanting mantras, and then he should perform the utterance of Gayatri at the prescribed junction of the day. He should arrange a seat facing either east or north, or else directly facing the deity, and should bathe and clean the deity. Then he should present clothing and ornaments, sprinkle water on the vessels and other paraphernalia to be used in the worship, and offer water for bathing the deity's feet, argya, water for washing his mouth, fragrant oils, incense, lamps, flowers, and food preparations. After this, one should worship the Lord's personal servants and bodyguards, his consort energies, and the spiritual master by chanting their respective mula mantras. The worshipper should recite prayers from the Puranas and other sources, offer obeisances flat on the ground, beg for benediction, and place on himself the remnants of the Lord's garlands. Included in this method of deity worship are the proper installation of the transcendental deities by constructing a fine temple, and also the conducting of processions and other festivals. By worshipping Lord Sri Hari with unconditional devotion in this manner, one gains access to pure loving service to his lotus feet. But if one steals property that has been given as charity to the deity or the Brahmins, whether given by himself or by others, he will have to take his next birth as a stool-eating worm. Okay. Shloka Anusharana, verses 1 to 55, the process of deity worship. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, O Master of the devotees, please explain to me the prescribed method for worshipping you in your deity form. What are the qualifications of those devotees who worship the deity? On what basis is such worship established? And what is the specific method of worship? All the great sages repeatedly declare that such worship brings the greatest benefit possible in human life. This is the opinion of Narada Muni, the great Vyasadeva, and my own spiritual master, Brihaspati. O most magnanimous Lord, the instructions on this process of deity worship first emanated from your lotus mouth. Then they were spoken by the great Lord Brahma to his sons, headed by Bhrigu, and by Lord Shiva to his wife, Parvati. This process is accepted by and appropriate for all the occupational and spiritual orders of society. Therefore, I consider worship of you in your deity form to be the most beneficial for all of all spiritual practices, even for women and shudras. O Lotus-Eyed One, O Supreme Lord of all lords of the universe, please explain to your devoted service this means of liberation from the bondage of work." Right, so this is applicable to everybody. That's why it's so perfect. Just like hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is applicable for everybody, worshipping the deity is applicable for everybody. Right? But you see, these other processes of religion, they may not be so applicable. Right? Because why? They're material. They're based on the bodily connection. But the Pancharatrik is not. It's not based on the body. Right? It's based on one's spiritual, dedication, right? So initiation you have to have, because otherwise the body does have its restrictions, right? Depending on the body and all that. So therefore, then with initiation, then one doesn't have to worry about those.
So you could say the Vedic is based on the condition, but Pancharatrik is not actually.
No, no. It means it takes into consideration your conditioning, but not to the detail that the Veda does. In other words, if your material conditioning is satisfied by engaging in Pancharatra, then you don't need to go beyond, because as it said, it's a combination of the Vedic and the Tantra, the Pancharatra.
Right.
But if it's not enough, then you add in the details, because Prabhupada already gave Varnashram, but it was basically Paramahamsa Varnashram. Because you see, even the Paramahamsa, within there, they were married and this and that, the Prajapatis and all this and that. So then he gave that much of Varnashram. But when that wasn't enough, people want more. They want the sense of ownership, that sense of identity and all those, beyond just I'm a devotee serving the deities and preaching. Right? You know, that whole temple life. Then you have to bring in the balance of Varnashram. Because up to that, then you see it's the conclusion of Varnashram. So it's Varnashram, but we generally wouldn't consider it Varnashram. But as soon as you add in the technical points where the occupation is brought in,
yes. Yes.
Then we'll call it Varnashram. Yes. Right? Because, you know, for most, Varnashram means farming, you know, growing vegetables, dairy. You know, that's Varnashram. They don't consider, you know, the Brahminical aspect. It means, you know, doing those duties, like doing samskars. Like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like we have to do Varnashram, otherwise that's what Prabhupada wanted. Well, what about giving a dakshin to the Brahmin who just did the samskars? Or why aren't you doing the samskars? Oh, we just chant. We don't care about the rules. So, you know, You know, it's not consistent. So that's the whole thing, is that therefore Prabhupada said, now we have to introduce Varnashram. Means you have to add in what's left, the other last three of the eight. He already gave five. Right? And they were running while he was present. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is the Vedic fills in the details if someone needs more than what the Pancharatra. The Pancharatra fills in details when Bhagavat's not enough. His Prabhupada started with just that. Chant 64 rounds, he'd go out on Hari Nam all day, Hari Bal. Like that. And then, you know, okay, that didn't work, so then, you know, more Hari Nam and less Japa. You know, I think when they were doing 64 rounds, there probably wasn't, you know, 10, 12 hours of Hari Nam. But as it goes down, then the Hari Nam goes up, so then it works out. But then when that didn't work, devotees weren't studying, learning the philosophy, weren't discussing, didn't have that regulation in their lives, then Prabhupada introduced the Pancharatrik, more detail. Right? So then in 1980, he gave the temple program and all those things like that. But it's still in that context of that Paramahamsa lifestyle. It's just now applied in Pancharatra. And then when he introduces the Vedic, it's still supposed to be that. It's just how much you need to support. Right? Does that make sense? You want to run a business, that means there has to be the boss, there has to be the Shudras. But that still doesn't mean that you're not giving charity to the temple, to the Brahmins, to the preaching. You know what I'm saying? So then you have to do all this. If you're just doing service to the temple, you go out in Sankirtan, bring in all the money, it's not yours anyway. It's all sannyas. But as soon as you want, it's your money, now you have to bring in those elements of Varnashram that govern it. Right? Because the regulation is to govern sense gratification. So if it's not yours, then what's the problem? But as soon as it is yours, now you need the Varnashram. Right? And if you don't use Varnashram, since the conditioned living entity needs religion, then we'll either make it up or we'll make a, you know, use of what the karmis use or any combination. You know, it's like it says here, Vedic, secondary, you know, tantras or a combination of these. You know, we'll either take from the karmis, make it up, or we'll combine them. You know. Okay. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, bhakti without association of devotees is difficult for persons whose minds are attached to sons and wife. Uddhava asked about such persons who follow deity worship mentioned in the scriptures in order to free them from this attachment. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Uddhava, there is no end to the innumerable Vedic prescriptions for executing deity worship. So I shall explain this topic to you briefly, one step at a time. Right? There's unlimited points and details in that. So he'll just go through it, you know, as the briefly. So he'll be hitting the major categories. Like that. So that makes it, just saying that so that we don't. One should carefully worship me by selecting one of the three methods by which I receive sacrifice, Vedic, Tantric, or mixed. Right, so Vedic means Vaikanasa use, worship is all done with Vedic mantras. So that means only those who are in those lines, they can do that worship. Like Vaikanasa, unless you're born in the families of Vaikanasa, you can't do the worship. Problem is the Tantric also, unless you're born in those families, you can't do that either. That's the uniqueness of the Pancharatra, which is the mixed. Because we use both. Is that through initiation, then you can be qualified. Well, the other ones, if you're not from that background, then you can't be initiated into it. But the Pancharatra, it doesn't matter the background, so that's why it goes with the Sankirtan mission. Right? Because otherwise, in the Dwapara Yuga, the deity worship is the main thing. Now, many would be worshipping through the Pancharatra, but many would be also using the Vedic or the Tantric. But the point is, they're all worshipping the deity. They're all worshipping Krishna. Does that make sense? So for us, the only ones we can actually do is the mixed. Okay. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Vedic worship consists of using mantras such as Purusha Shukta from the Vedas and using procedures from the Vedas. Right? So it's very simple. The procedures are very simple, but the elaborateness is all the mantras. Right? Because the mantras take a long time. Right? The tantra, you want to install the pot, Ihavaha Ihatishta. Right? then that's the Sri stopped there. We keep going a bit more, right? So, because theirs will have other mixes, which ones they take. So, that's all that is. But in the, if you're following the Veda, then depending upon who it is, in Samaveda, there's three mantras. The Samaveda mantras are sung, so they're quite long. Or if it's Rig Veda, I think it's eight mantras. Right? So then how long, they like chanting half a Purusha Shukta, but the other tantra is Ihavaha Iyatishta. Right? So you can see why some prefer the tantras. Yeah. So, yeah. So, even though the procedures are very simple, the mantras then are very lengthy. Tantrika means procedures described in works such as Gotamiya Tantra. Mixed deity worship use of procedures or mantras such as the eight-syllable mantra prescribed in both the Vedas and Tantras. But you'll see it in both. So we'll use both. So that's the Mukha means deity worship. Mukha. Okay, so the big Mukha means the big deity worship. Okay. So that means, the big Mukha is always Krishna. So he's the remote cause, and then you have the boss as the immediate cause. So as Indra, actually Krishna's Indra, and then because of that potency, that Indra is performing his duty, so he becomes Indra. But actually the primary term is Krishna. So in the same way with Mukha, it means that Krishna is the big Mukha.
And Indra is called the Shatamukha.
Huh?
The audio alone, Indra is called the Shatamukha. 100 years his partner's Shatamukha.
Who's called?
Indra.
Shatamukha. Yeah, but Krishna is the, how you say? Yeah, the unlimited.
The Mahamukha.
Yeah, the Mahamukha, yes. Among the three methods, one should worship me by one's preferred method. Right? Okay. So we're given the Pancharatra, which is based in Tantras, is based on Gotamiya, and then it has the particular Vedic elements in it that are, you know, have been given to us by the Acharya, like Purusha Shukta. Sri Krishna continued, "Now please listen faithfully as I explain exactly how a person who has achieved twice-born status through the relevant Vedic prescriptions should worship me with devotion." Right? So it's twice-born. That's it. You know, we always try to stretch it beyond that. No, but it's twice-born. That's it. The temple worship means it's twice-born. In your house, you do what you like. But the point is it's the temple means it's this standard. Right? "A twice-born person should worship me, his worshipable Lord, without duplicity, offering appropriate paraphernalia and loving devotion to my deity form, or to a form of me appearing upon the ground, in fire, in sun, in water, or within the worshipper's own heart." Right, so these are all the various kinds of deities that are there. You know, the authorized forms. So then the deity form, or the archa, then that's the standard. Everybody likes that because the maximum amount of worship can be offered. The other ones, then, it's more limited in the processes of worship that of offering. Is that yes? No. I understand we're going to have this very long Warsaw moment for this duration of this chapter. I'm getting the idea.
So we need to ask some question.
Something. To, yeah. Okay. Okay. Then appearing on the ground like that, because it would be a standard that some would go out, just draw on the ground, do their worship and all that, and then go. Or like big festivals or big programs like that, many times those who aren't, don't have all the qualifications for temple worship, they go down to the beach, you know, make deities in the sand and stuff like that. So these sand deities, it's not a new thing.
Bonafide.
It's bona fide. Yeah, but it's supposed to be Krishna. Right? Yeah.
It is temporary.
Yes, that'll come up about the permanent or temporary. So permanent means that like the archa is installed. Yes. Temporary means you're going to do the worship and then stop that worship. Like in the pot, you install them, temporary worship for the day. They go in the night. Or if you draw on the ground, that will be temporary. You know? Or in the mind, that'll be temporary. So most all, the archa, that's your permanent one. Like that. But even of the archa, then you have temporary and permanent. Temporary means that you do worship for a specific function. And they get the full worship of a deity in that form.
Yes.
Right? Then when that worship is done or that program is done, then they go back to sleep. They probably had a pair of Gorni Thai deities in his room, in a trunk. And so whenever there was like Gaur Purnima or there was some big traveling programs or some outside program, then they would go out to the program, like they came to Kumbh Mela. And then they're worshipped only by second initiated devotees, and you know the proper offerings, artiks, everything like that. Then when the festival's over, then back in the trunk. That's temporarily installed. There is no such thing as uninstalled. Like that. It's in the same category as uninstalled wife. Right? That you only deal when you want, and when you don't want, you don't deal.
Yes.
And how does that work out for anybody?
It's called it dull.
Dull, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, you understand? So there isn't anything. There's permanently and temporarily. So this idea is, oh, they're not installed so anybody can worship, or that. No, it doesn't work like that. You still technically requires Pancharatrika initiation. Right? And then you can, but they may be temporarily installed. Does that make sense? So if you're going from that, then it goes down from there. It's becoming a simplified form of that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Can we say that, for example, for Atayatra, we can have a non-installed deity, but temporary?
No, it's temporarily installed. There's no non-installed. When they're there, they're dealt with as good as.
As good as. And after, they can put them to sleep.
Yes, it's just like, let's say, just continue the uninstalled wife. Okay? So, during the week, Monday to Friday, you live in your place, do your job, you do whatever you do and everything like that, and the girl, she's doing whatever she's doing. Then on the weekends, then you get together as a couple, and then you go this and that, go to dinner, so many different things, right? So the dealings, they have to be on the same standard as if they were a wife, just that they're a temporary wife, only for the weekend. But the other days are not. Does that make sense? So, this idea is that I can do whatever I want, that doesn't work in real life. There is no such thing. Do we have an uninstalled dog? You know, we feed it when we want, don't feed it when we want. Right? Unless you want an uninstalled leg. When the dog gets so hungry, right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, this idea of uninstalled, it's there's permanent and temporary. And then within that, then you have to decide how you're doing. Does that make sense? So at home, you come home, then you offer obeisances to your deity. When you're not, no one's offering obeisances. But when you're there, it's not that, well, they're uninstalled, I'll offer when I want, not when I want. No. You come in front of the deity, you offer obeisances. You're cooking something, you make an offering. You understand? Does that make sense? Yeah. But then you go out on a trip for 2 weeks, and no one's making any offering to the pictures. You understand? But when you're there, then you are. That's the meaning of permanent and temporary. Temporary means when the worship, when it's time for, when the activities of worship, you know, your those will happen, then they're going on. And when they're not, they're not. But in permanent means you have to arrange. You're there or not, the puja goes on. Does that make sense?
And it is supposed to be the same level of worship.
Yeah, same level of worship, but whatever's appropriate for your position. Temple worship's always going to be more than home worship. Home worship's always simpler. The main structure is always there, but the detail is less. Like that. So, you know, it's up to the individual. But the basic things have to be there. So this idea is, oh, we don't have to do anything. You know, it's just the devotion. You know, then why do you need the deity? Right? You know, because the picture you see, you smile, you offer your obeisances. The deity you see, and then you have to contemplate, you know, should I, you know, dress and bathe them, or should I, you know, do that, you know, on the weekend or just on the codices? Or this? So it's not as spontaneous. The pictures, it's much more spontaneous. So, yeah. Okay, then on the ground in fire means in the yajna, because you install the deity there. Then in the sun means with the Gayatri mantra. In water, then in pots, you know, you'll install the deity in the water pot. Within the worshipper's own heart, you do by meditation, like you see that one Brahmin, forget where he was from, but he did in nectar devotion, explained. He did all that worship in his heart. And then, you know, he attained the Lord, like that. So these, one should first purify his body by cleansing his teeth and bathing. Right? Then one should perform a second cleansing by smearing the body with earth and chanting both Vedic and Tantric mantras.
Our guide is the mixer, huh? We can say Vedic and Tantric here, but he says and chanting both Vedic and Tantric.
Ours Vedic, Tantric, and Pancharatra.
What's Tantric
in it? Which one? The Mula mantras. But technically, the Gayatris, those are probably Vedic. It means we don't know so much about them, but they're in Mahanarayan Upanishad. It's the fourth part of the Taittiriya Upanishad. You always hear quoted the first from the first three generally. So then, in there that I know of, basically all the Gayatris are there.
Because we always say that it's only Brahma Gayatri that it's Vedic.
Yeah, Brahma Gayatri is Vedic, so for us, we're chanting those because of Pancharatra. Mm. And we're getting the Brahma Gayatri only because of the Pancharatra. Because we qualify for Pancharatric initiation, getting that, the body changes, then we can chant the Gayatri. Because otherwise, if you haven't attained it by the time you're 16, means when you turn 16, if you don't already have it, you're unqualified to get it.
That's Upanayana.
That's Upanayana, yeah. It has to happen before you're 16. Right? Otherwise, you're fallen, and it's just there is no reformation process after that. It's not like, oh, do this, stand on your head, do this. No, it's just gone. So it's only by Pancharatra that we're getting. Is that makes sense? Yes. So we're coming. They're coming to us through the Pancharatric method. But there's a good chance that except the Gopal mantra, that would probably be from the tantras, would be Vedic. So that's what it says. It's a combination of both. That's the Pancharatra. But we're using the Vedic, but by Pancharatric methods.
Right? This is decided by the Acharya.
Yes, it's there in the line. The Acharyas work these out. They give the system of worship. But they're standard things. It's not nothing's new made up. It's just putting it together so it works for those who are following. Okay, then cleansing the body with earth and chanting both Vedic and Tantric mantras. So you have the second aspect is you're cleansing with, or you have the one is connected with the bath, that you know you're using some kind of unguent that cleans the body. You know, before they would use mud. Like this, or some other things, you know, mung dal, ground up, these kind of different things that are used as a soap kind of thing. The other, so that's one. The second thing is that you're putting on tilak.
Yes.
So you've taken the bath, but now you put on the tilak. That now makes the body completely pure. And then in the other, in the mantras, that you're taking the bath, you've taken the bath, you've done the prithvi snan and rinsed off, but then, now it's a matter of the final part of the bath is remembering Krishna. So you chant some mantras remembering Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's called the mantra snan, right? Of all the different kinds of snans, the mantra snan is one of them. And so that bath is the most important. Because that then you remember the Lord. Otherwise you don't. You're only worried about your soap and it's almost running out and I got to get some new ones and then how am I going to get it and I got to work in that time and that. Then I got to talk to this one but then I never remember to talk to that one and then, you know, yeah. So, therefore, then, you, at one point you remember the Lord and end your bath with that. Yes? So that when you go to put on the tilak, you're thinking about Krishna rather than still about, you know, and then, yeah, I thought, but then last time I told him, and then, you know, yeah.
And then, no tilak.
No tilakas. Yeah, there's no tilakas. You can never remember to tell the guy. Yeah.
It's so much remembering life.
Yes, but then if you remember Krishna, then at least, since you can't remember anything, then you remember Krishna, and then you get the benefit of all remembrance. So that's the purification that comes there. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that in these literatures, they'll explain all these in the most compact words. It means both. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Jai Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanand. Remember, tomorrow's no class. Oh. Yeah, because I forgot about it this morning.
I forgot. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Announcement: tomorrow there will be no class, neither morning nor evening. On Thursdays,
regular class.
Usually. He also promised to tell us about the.
Oh yeah, no, it looks to be that it's. I thought it was somehow or another. I remember 6th and 10th. Mm. But it was. I forgot about this. It seems to be third. It seems I was thinking 10th no classes. It seems 10th we start classes. Yeah, from third there's no class. I'll confirm that because they're supposed to send me the information. But it appears that. So that means a Thursday, Friday? Is it? No. I think it's just a week. I think it's just a straight week. I think 10th is Monday.
No, it means January.
Thursday. Okay, so that means we start again on Thursday. Yeah, so then Thursday, Friday, no class, and then Monday, Tuesday, no class, and then Thursday again we start. That's 10th is Thursday. And 3rd is Thursday. Yeah, so then that.
That's short?
Pretty much short.
So I will send out the notification.
Yeah, it's that I know of is from the 3rd. And that I need to just the 10th. I think it's, yeah, 10th, it should be definite. Like that. Because I don't think it's any shorter than that.